If you had to think about who to either organizationally have oversee RevCycle, or at least think about a partnership, yeah. Operations is far more important than finance. Because those 140 steps that you talked about, a whole bunch of those are not people with RevCycle on their title.
That's right.
They're the front desk. They're the provider. And it's like finance cares about the output, but the day-to-day work in those 140 steps is between the RevCycle team and the ops team more often than not, right?
That's right. There is such a synergy there that they have to work in accord.
Yeah.
Almost like a waltz. It's a beautiful dance between the two groups, and they are one and the same. They have totally different motivations, and when they come in for the day and what they're trying to get accomplished, I think it's just making sure that those teams are in lockstep, they're collaborative, and they're also expressing what's important in their world. Yeah.
This episode of Vital Conversations is produced and distributed by Be Connected, a social media management firm in Northeast Wisconsin.
Hi, my name is Tim Cohen, and welcome to Vital Conversations presented by Focus Solutions. Here we talk to healthcare industry experts about what's happening in their part of our space and how that's being impacted by current trends, technology, data, those types of things. And I'm pleased to have as my guest today, Pete Martinez. Pete is a longtime RCM executive, and that's what we're going to talk about a little today. Pete, welcome to Vital Conversations.
Good morning, Tim, and thanks for inviting me on. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
So being a former RCM guy myself, I always joke that, you know, nobody showed up on third grade career day to tell us how exciting medical billing and RevCycle will be, but a bunch of us ended up here. Take just a second, give us a quick background on your story, what you've been doing in RCM, and how in the world you ended up in this crazy space as well.
Yeah, no, thanks, Tim. Yeah, happy to do it. I've been in healthcare business operations revenue cycle for 30 years now. I've been in the ambulatory, hospital, payer, and the clearinghouse side of the business.
Okay, so you've seen it all.
Yeah, I've seen it all. I've been fortunate enough to lead the end-to-end revenue cycle for Fortune 1, Fortune 2 companies. Have also been in the PE space for quite some time. And so, in fact, one of my PEs I was associated with actually sold to one of those Fortune 1 companies. So I've been able to experience a lot in this space, and definitely glad to be here with you.
Awesome. Well, with that, that hints at the particular angle I'd like to take with you today. There's a lot of activity consolidated in the ambulatory space. Some of that is in the form of practices merging directly. Some of that is in the form of MSOs that are providing service. But clearly, a lot of that activity has been our friends from private equity coming over, beginning years ago in the hospital-based specialties of radiology and anesthesia, and now kind of working their way across the specialty. So you had a lot of experience at the intersection of revenue cycle and private equity. Talk a little bit about what you've seen. We'd like to kind of dive into the opportunities, challenges, lessons learned around PE meets physician practice and the rev cycle folks are sitting in that.
Yeah, happy to do that. And what to your point, Tim, in fact, in 2024, private equity U.S. healthcare soared, I think, to the highest it's ever been on record. I think it was $104 billion. 66% of that was healthcare acquisitions, closed deals. So they definitely are very interested. I think in 2025, the estimates were up 10 to 13% over 24. So they're not slowing down. And I think, you know, from an RCM perspective, these PE investment firms, what they aim to do is really enhance the operational efficiencies. And one of the things from an RCM perspective that I always see is they often overlook the complexities of RCM. And, you know, you've seen this, it's just so disruptive to the revenue streams. And one of the things I like to say is RCM is not finance in its truest sense, but it gets lumped into finance because, you know, they think it's balance sheet and those types of things, but in income statements. But RCM is often an afterthought or omitted altogether. And so what I see is you have these common scenarios where post-acquisition, you have one of two things. You have a a new CEO, new to the company, been there for, you know, last 6 months or so, and really struggling and tied up with budgets and P&L and EBITDA and shareholders and stakeholders, looking at OPEX and CAPEX MAs. And then, you know, they're trying to spin up new de novos. Like, that's their world. And then so are the second scenario is where you have the RCM leader, the VP, the chief, whatever, the interim, and they've been recently onboarded and they're really struggling. They're struggling to assimilate in this new environment and they're trying to navigate the situation and they're contending with this new role and they've got a new EMR perhaps or a new PM platform. So they're just really trying to implement all this new stuff and adjust and how to do business. And, so these two scenarios, I tell you, Tim, and you've seen it. It's just they're not unique in today's post-acquisition world.
They're not. You raise a great point, and this has been my experience as well. So, yeah. You know, the finance folks roll in, they acquire some practices, they see the R in rev cycle, say, oh, it's revenue, let's park it with the CFO. Mm-hmm. But oftentimes the CFO is specifically recruited because she's got private equity experience. She understands the banking relationship. She knows how to convert from cash to accrual accounting, all the things that the equity sponsor cares about. Now somebody parks this regulated, complicated, you know, government payers, self-insurance, commercial payers, what in the world is a dual eligible case rates, carve outs under the CFO because it had R in it. If you're the head of rev cycle reporting up to a CFO, you're speaking two totally different languages.
You're right. It could be English and Greek. I mean, that's really what it is. And, you know, what often happens, and they have strategies, like the PE. What they're trying to do is they're trying to implement and centralize the RCM function often. So post-acquisition, you know, they're trying to do significant improvements to their financial performance. So they're looking at, and nobody disputes that, it's this information or a circumstance that either is often overlooked or omitted during the due diligence phase of the acquisition. And those are the sticking points. You know, I'll give you an example. What happens is, you know, you have a clinic or a group that wants to join this major PE effort and they know it's going to sell. And these things can take, as you know, several months in advance, you know, so they know it's going to sell. And so what's the largest cost to the company? Labor, always. Really? And so what is the motivating factor of the seller? They want to get the largest evaluation for their business or an X multiplier. So the actual selling process, you know, takes months, but during that time, attrition takes place. And what's common in healthcare is about a 30% attrition rate in some of those positions. So, you know, we often say, and this is where I look all the time, you've got like a front desk, let's just say three people up there doing their job. You get one person that decides to leave, but the business is up for sale. So maybe the owners aren't really motivated to backfill. And then, so you get two remaining people covering that person that quit. You get two people doing the job of three, 5 months goes by. The second person gets burned out, decides to leave. Month six, the sale goes through. And then this is where it gets interesting. The company comes in and then does an evaluation and come to find out you've got one person doing the job of three. And so, you know, so the new company that just bought has to hire two people immediately. The PE purchasing company begins losing money on their investment because they have to start hiring and they don't understand why.
Right.
And so, yeah.
That's also a great example, you know. If you go back years ago when rev cycle first began to emerge as a term, people were like, oh, is this just a marketing enhancement of billing? Right. It's like, well, no, there is a billing team that is in the back. They're way down the chain on all the things that are required to turn work into cash. And you mentioned the front desk person. It's always surprised me. In many regards, one of the most important people in the revenue cycle because of the validation of patient information for eligibility, payer info, beginning to communicate expectations. It's oftentimes the lowest paid person in the entire process. It's got the highest turnover. They are wearing four hats. And in the scenario you talk about, they're kind of treated as an afterthought as it relates to the rev cycle.
Right.
But the great example.
You're right. They just don't have the credentials or they don't. But that's the gatekeeper. That's really where it all begins. When I look at the rev cycle and just, you know, Tim, there's 140 distinct front, middle, back processes in an RCM that have to execute perfectly. And if they don't, then something can happen. And even though you get reimbursed, there's clawbacks and all those sort of things. And so, I look at it. Another way I look at this too is, I advise PE groups to bring in people like us so we can really take a look and perform a full cycle eval. One of the things that first step I look at is the SOPs and what's actually happening out on that floor.
Right.
And what I mean by that is, during the normal due diligence process, they check a box sometimes and like, do you have SOPs?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But they were written back, when we had two doctors or now we have 10 or we had three locations. Now we have 20 and we were out of network, but we have, and we had a different PM or a different EMR. And so the point is, it's not at all reflective what's actually happening today. So the SOPs are wrong. The people are off doing their own job. And like you said, they're kind of low down on the totem pole, so to speak, but it's very problematic to look at it that way because that's where it all starts and it leads to downstream denials and revenue leaks.
Yeah.
So,
which gets to, I think, one of the points I would advise, I want to get your thoughts on this, rev cycle leaders working in an equity-backed organization, is if you had to think about who to either organizationally have oversee rev cycle or at least think about a partnership, operations is far more important than finance. Because those 140 steps that you talked about, a whole bunch of those are not people with rev cycle on their title.
That's right.
They're the front desk. They're the provider. And it's like finance cares about the output, but the day-to-day work in those 140 steps is between the rev cycle team and the ops team more often than not, right?
That's right. There is such a synergy there that they have to work in accord.
Yeah.
Almost like a waltz. It's a beautiful dance between the two groups, and they are one and the same. They have totally different motivations and when they come in for the day and what they're trying to get accomplished. I think it's just making sure that those teams are in lockstep, they're collaborative, and they're also expressing what's important in their world.
Yeah. Yeah.
Often each team gets frustrated with one another because they don't understand why things happen. Like, why did you miss the insurance card? Why weren't you? And I used to often tell my teams, let's go have a little tour of what's happening out at that front desk and those schedulers. Often you have people out the door. They're late. The doctor wants to be on time. There's all sorts of things happening. If phone's ringing, they have to do, and they're trying to do all this stuff. And it's just it's a madhouse sometimes, especially a busy practice. And so just getting that pre-registration, some of those steps processed beforehand and really working together and how to solving those types of issues is really the key to moving forward and accomplishing that major lift.
And you think about, one of the hottest issues in the space right now is obviously around pre-authorization, and the battle between providers and payers. But you start thinking about what that means to operations, right? They're trying to get patients in or get them scheduled for a surgery or a test. Rev cycle needs that. I mean, it's just, again, one more example of where, what would you say to rev cycle folks about how they would better educate and better support their operations partners? Again, they wear a lot of hats. They've got other objectives, but if they don't understand some things, it goes sideways.
Absolutely. It's not an instant event. So especially like there's a lot of information that has to be acquired from the patient. So the patient sometimes doesn't know. But so you have to kind of dig a little bit. But once you have either their insurance, you have to then reach out either via portal. But you have to then find out what can be authorized. And that can take some time. The payer may have to take some time to get back to you. Right. So even though the provider and their motivations are to see the patient like right away, sometimes it's not up to the revenue cycle person. It's actually the payer that's taking the time. Now, I'm not talking emergency services. That can always happen. But when we're talking elective procedures, those things can take, 7 to 10, sometimes 15 business days to get the information back. So if that type of information gets conveyed to the operations at clin staff, that gives them a better perspective that it's not Pete or the revenue cycle team that's holding this up. We're working with the payer to get back and we're following up every day and we have these meetings and it's scheduled and we're emphasizing, but that just gives a great perspective to the clin team, what those delays are all about.
So that's a great place to pivot. I want to talk about a new project you've got going on because there's so much information. People are turning over on the rev cycle team, on the clinical operations team. You're trying to crack that code in a different way, aren't you? Tell us a little bit about what you're trying to do right now.
Absolutely. I'd love to talk about it. It's super exciting for me. I've been working on this project, really trying to build something that's near and dear to me. We're about to launch towards the end of April. It's a training and education and consulting portal. And so after spending years in the healthcare revenue cycle world, I saw how many revenue cycle professionals were really just struggling, not because they lacked the talent, because it's really because they lacked the access to the right training tools. And often the case in our world, Tim, train the trainer is really what it's all about. And the trainer didn't get taught correctly, or now you have a dysfunctional RCM process somewhere, revenue leaks, frustrated staff, and the owners are just throwing their hands up and they just want it fixed. And so I created a portal, askcws.com. It's a platform that's designed to give healthcare teams access to the proper expertise, via expert-led webinars, actionable downloads, and real-world insights on how to really change the revenue cycle properly. This is some stuff that I'm adding in here that I've charged my consulting clients thousands of dollars for. But if you're new to revenue cycle, if you're recently promoted, or just need to strengthen your RCM foundation, then that's what this place is.
One other big trend that's going on in the space for, you know, obvious reasons, like you said, labor's high, especially in these PE-backed firms, is the rise of offshore, you know, which probably began very early 2000s. It is now increasingly important. So how do you see something like Ask CWS, right? How do you see that also helping if somebody's got whether it's a vendor or a captive offshore, but now you're trying to introduce members of the RevCycle team that might not only be new to RevCycle, but they don't have a context of American healthcare.
That's right. And that's a great question. Labor arbitrage has been one of those things, trying to do more with less and squeeze the cost of labor out. But you still need to have that base understanding of revenue cycle. So Ask walks you through the very basics, gives you a great foundation of what RCM healthcare is. And then it goes into more advanced and all the way up through executive level, if that's what you're trying to do, and really how to function within the executive realm as well. So it's got everything in there at all three levels. We've been fortunate enough to have access to those type of environments, and really just share this, because I tell you, it's hard to get your arms around this whole entire environment. It's all its own. And then how do you function collectively within it? And so this is really there to help you.
One other question on the new platform, and then I want to cycle back before we land with kind of some advice to RevCycle leaders, particularly in PE-backed worlds. Yeah. Talk just a little bit about how you see people using the platform. Is it on demand, as needed subscription, those types of things?
Yeah, so it's basically, it's a subscription model. It's $10 a month. And so I want to just get this in the hands of people that could really use it. And then there's certain packages you could get into. If you're looking into KPI, data analytics, how to set up an operation, how you want to really function going forward, how you communicate what meetings you should set. It's all that in there. And I just want to try and get everybody as much information as possible, how to strengthen their RCM, and how to function, you know, and get out of the gate on a good foot. And I can tell you, there's a lot of folks that are coming out thinking about getting into healthcare, yeah, and they just don't quite understand where to start. And this is a great intro for them to see if this is something that they'd like to pursue. It's been very rewarding for me and for us. And so just to kind of give them the oversight, but then they can really dive into the weed just below that and get into the mud of the RCM nuts and bolts.
So before we come to a close, I'm going to go back to where we started, and I want to ask you to sit on two sides of the table. There are a lot of people that are now in an equity-backed physician practice, and more often than not, whether we agree or disagree, the head of RevCycle is reporting to the CFO. What would you first of all say to a CFO who was brought in because she understands private equity, great finance person, new to RevCycle? It's like, if you want to ask your head of RevCycle for three or four measures that you want to watch all the time, what would you tell a CFO? Like, watch this more than anything else. This will tell you how well your engine's running, how much leaky cash you've got going on. What would you say to the CFO?
Well, the first and foremost, that always translates into dollar, is your denials. If you can get your arms around that denial rate, and take a look at if and go back trailing 12 months and start to really baseline that, because that's going to give you a really good sense of what's happening. There's really only two ways a claim can go. Either it's going to process and pay, or it's going to deny. And then if you start to look at that denial beyond the denial rate, then you can start to understand what is denying. It's important to really get to the bottom of a root cause analysis and start to understand, is this a registration thing, or is it a documentation? Is it a coding thing? That really starts to uncover a lot in terms of what's happening within the engine. So that's the first thing I would look at. The other couple are really table stakes. Get your arms around the DSO. How long is it taking you to get your cash through the door? That DSO is your average time it's taking to get paid. And then look at your percentages within your AR aging. Look at what's happening in your AR greater than 90. What is your percentage? And then again, baseline that. What's happening snapshot month over month? And then the last thing I would do is look at your net collect rate. So see if you're getting paid what you should be getting paid. Anything below 97%, there's something wrong within that engine, that part of it.
Right.
And as you know, you could really go crazy on this. We could probably fill an hour on just KPIs alone.
Like, for example, you know, once you get a CFO starting to understand denials, then you start double clicking and go, no, wait a second. Now I've got one kind of denial where the payer said, I don't have enough information. I'm at pause. I've got another kind of denial where the payer says, I have enough information, and I'm saying no. Those are two really different things with different actions, right? Once I get to my average DSO, then it's like, well, some of it pays really fast, and then there's a tail that's taking forever. So you're right. Even on those headline DSO numbers or headline KPI numbers, once you've got that framework, you start double clicking. Now, this probably gets to the other side. So now you've got a head of rev cycle. First time they've ever been part of a private equity backed world. This new CFO has been parachuted in. They keep saying, what is DSO again? And does the denial mean we wrote it off? What would be your two or three pieces of advice to a rev cycle leader talking to a finance professional? What would you tell them to get right with that new CFO boss?
Yeah, I would say revenue capture. What on the PE side of things, they're looking at gross revenue. I mean, all the things that we talk about and all the, you know, we can geek out on all the rev cycle stuff. They're looking at gross revenue and revenue capture and month over month. And so they're really interested in they have targets and going into the acquisition. It's something was very appealing to them that they were looking at. And they said, wow, this is a great business to get into. They're up and coming, or their revenues are on the rise. So when they start looking at, let's look at the gross revenues and what they're doing, look at the payer mix within that gross revenue as well, because there's some things in there that can really affect what we're charging and what we're billing out, and understand that how we're realizing revenue. That's also a big point, because there can be things within the revenue cycle that are preventing revenue from being captured. And it depends. So like what happens often in that case, Tim, is you go from, whatever they've been doing before, and they start to connect into a industrial strength, if you will, revenue cycle team. And so there's some major charges that may not be allowed or billed, and they start to drop off. And so there's some very common issues that pop up within there. And so just get really comfortable with the revenue charge capture, what things can and cannot be happening. You get into compliance, you get into all sorts of other things. There's dates within there too, Tim, that, are very interesting. It's the date of service versus the date of posting. And so
if those of us in the rev cycle world had a quarter for every hour we've spent going, well, is this date of service, date of entry, and having somebody on the other side of the table kind of look at us like our dog, totally confused, we'd all have enough money for a really nice vacation, wouldn't we?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. It gets so, and they don't get that part of it, but you know, from a revenue cycle perspective, like you're saying, from talking through that,
right,
gives another perspective. And like when you're talking about like how we handle our books, if it's an accrual based or cash based, those dates become very integral in how things happen. So I would definitely introduce that concept. I would make sure that they're in it. You're probably going to have to do it a few times before they get it and remind them. just so that we can all be in sync. And that's from the PE side of things. The sponsors are going to want to know.
Right.
And then you're going to want to talk through the CFO and let them know how things get booked. And then what's happening within the revenue cycle that's affecting both of those things.
Right.
Just to keep that perspective going. And it's a constant reminder. I get constant calls all the time. Like, you know, I thought this was this. And then you have to look at it and it's like, no, that's not how, that's a date of service. That's not the date of posting. So,
absolutely. Yeah. Well, Pete, it's been a great conversation. Before I let you go, remind people once again, you know, where they can find the work that you guys are doing now to help with training and education. How do they find you?
Thanks, Tim. It's askcws.com. Ask like the word askcws.com. And you just click on that and there's a join now button and you're off to the races.
So Pete, thanks. I think the thing I would encourage our RevCycle friends who find themselves in this world is it may be frustrating, but the good news is you're really, really important to these people that wrote big checks to buy these practices.
Right.
So if you just lean into the challenge, they'll value you for a long time. Pete Martinez, thanks for being a guest on Vital Conversations.
Awesome. Thanks, Tim. It's been a pleasure.
Vital Conversations is presented by Focus Solutions. Focus provides integrated IT data and software services to physician practices all across the United States. To hear more stories about physician practice leaders and what they are doing, subscribe to Vital Conversations wherever you get your podcast.